Whether you're fly fishing in a stream, getting those ankles wet, or deep in the ocean casting nets, fish nerds. Fish nerds. Fish nerds. It's a podcast.
Just for the halibut.
Fried in a basket or broiled in a...
Hello and welcome to the Fish Nerds, a show about fish, fishing, and eating fish. I'm Clay Groves, Chief Executive Fish Nerd, your host, licensed fishing guide, and your new best fishing friend. Hey, big thanks to Wally Pleasant for making us that theme song. People have been really giving some good feedback to it, and I appreciate it. So, we're happy you're listening. Tell your friends about us. We need more listeners. Give them a free show. Give them the gift of the Fish Nerds. Nothing says I love you like the gift of the Fish Nerds. But tonight in the show, we're going to jump right in. We got a lot going on. So much going on. Tonight, we have Shark Off. Shark Off is a recent invention. It's jewelry that prevents shark attacks. So if you're afraid to get eaten by sharks, this is a jewelry for you. We talk with the creators of Shark Off. We are updating you. We've got a winner for the Stinky Bait Contest. People called our Fish Nerds hotline and told us what they thought was the stinkiest bait. And we will announce the winner on tonight's show. And you can, of course, hear all the stinky bait choices. We have the Crappie Hippies' first big interview. A local legend, Kim Burnett. Kim Burnett is a crappie angler, fly fisher, fly tire, jig maker, all the things. And he was generous with his time and hung out with our friend, the Crappie Hippie. So a lot going on tonight. My first, first on the show is my chat with creator of Shark Off, Shay Geist. You can find all about Shark Off at thesharkoff.com or go to Kickstarter and just search for it. And I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, hey, sharks are never going to attack me. Why do I need jewelry to protect me from the sharks? We talk about that and more. Enjoy the interview. Here it is. All right, Fish Nerds, I'm very excited. I'm hanging out with Shay Geist. She is one of the creators and owners of Shark Off, the shark repellent surfwear jewelry. Shay, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, it's really cool. So I'm going to jump right in. So I found you because the Crappie Hippie, John King, said, Clay, you got to meet this lady from Kansas City who came up with an idea to keep sharks from eating her. And my first thought was, are shark attacks a problem? And then I thought, well, let me just check out her website and see what you got going on. So, Shay, you've created a bracelet or anklet that prevents sharks from eating people. Is that, am I accurate?
So yes and no. The what we talk about really more is mitigating the fear, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, as somebody who spends time in the water, that shark attacks are incredibly freaking rare, right?
Really rare, yeah.
I mean, you're more likely to die by being impaled by an icicle or killed by a cow or struck by lightning, like all kinds of fabulous and interesting ways that you
fabulous
could...
ways to die.
Yes.
Right, so last year there were 155 shark attacks.
Right. Depending on which.
Yeah.
Yeah. Depending on which database, right?
Yeah. This is from floridamuseum.ufl. 88 unprovoked attacks.
88. Yes. Unprovoked. Yeah. And so, yeah. And then maybe 10 fatalities. 10 is about average on the fatalities annually. So out of 7 billion, minuscule, right? And we don't shy away from that. We own that statistic and love it, honestly, because part of our goal is to minimize the demonization of sharks, right?
Right. Because we love sharks.
Yeah. Sharks are awesome, amazing animals. And so what our bracelet does is indeed repel sharks. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we want people to lose the fear and love the ocean.
Yes.
We don't think you can create a connection to something that you are afraid of. And we really need people to have a connection to the ocean and to the ecosystem of the ocean and to sharks if we are going to save them. It doesn't work if people are afraid and they don't care.
No, it's hard to save things that scare you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know,
well, we do it all the time.
True, true. Yeah. If somebody had a save the xenomorph, I probably wouldn't be engaged in that. Okay. So
what's a xenomorph?
Oh, sorry. The alien from Aliens.
Oh yeah. You are a nerd. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. See, my geek just slipped out. Yep,
right out of there.
So anyway, so the bracelet. So the first question always is what the fin, right? And second is how. So how is science, which is cool as well, but the real nitty gritty is electrochemistry, right? So sharks have sensors in their snouts called the ampullae of Lorenzini. The next time you look at a shark picture up close, you'll see a bunch of freckles on the snout. Those are the ampullae. Yeah. The ampullae can sense 5 1-billionths of a volt of electrical impulse.
Which is nothing.
Yeah. 5 1-billionths. I mean, right. Like, not even, you know, you can't even, like imagine that. Think about that. And so they use it the same. Everybody's heard that sharks can smell blood in the water for miles.
That's true.
Also true, right? And so they use the ampullae of Lorenzini in the same way. They use it to find fish that are in distress. So their hearts are beating really fast. And so they can ferret out that electrical impulse and find their prey, right? Mm-hmm. So we turn the ampullae of Lorenzini against them. The active element in our bracelet anklet hydrolyzes. Think about an Alka-Seltzer. When it interacts with the water, it gives off bubbles and creates an electrical charge in the water of about a volt and a half. So you and I can't feel that, but sharks who can feel 5 1-billionths of a volt are really, really impacted and unhappy about a field of 1.4 volts.
And so that repels them. How far away can they feel that field?
The field of the active element is about a meter around, or 3 feet.
Mm-hmm. Which is, so yeah, that's about as close to a shark as I ever want to be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Especially, well, especially
on the shark, you know.
Right. Especially since they're ambush predators, and you are not necessarily going to know that you're that close to a shark. So we like to say you are still going to experience, if you see the shark, you're still going to see it, and it's still going to get close to you. But when it comes time for that shark to decide whether or not it thinks maybe you're food, but the only way it can test is with its teeth, and it doesn't actually have any control over whether or not you survive that.
Right.
And the fact that it's a really unpleasant experience for you.
It sounds terrible.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. That it's going to get this extra piece of sensory information and decide to leave.
Right. And that's really the goal. And you nailed it earlier when you said that this is not really about repelling sharks, but about getting people more comfortable with going in the ocean.
Exactly.
And that's what this is for. This reminds me of like gluten-free eating and that sort of thing. It's people feel good about it. It helps. Those people, but they don't, you know, they don't need it for sure. I think they're good looking, and I actually backed your Kickstarter this morning. I
gave you
$25, and I'll give it to my daughter, who is not afraid of sharks, and she will laugh at me. Okay. Now, so you are afraid of sharks. You've had some shark experience. You saw Jaws as a kid, and
exactly,
it broke your brain.
My loving aunts and uncles. Took me to see Jaws because we were all a bunch of us going to the drive-in, and it was super cool. And actually, even that was quite a while ago.
Yeah.
And the more I think about it, because, you know, it's kind of part of my thought process every day. It might not have even been the movie we were going to see, but if you remember the drive-ins around here, I don't know how long you've lived here. I'm sorry, you don't live here.
I don't. We have drive-ins in New England too. So are we,
okay,
you're
good.
Not unique to Kansas.
So the drive-ins used to have multiple screens, like four screens. So I have a very specific memory about seeing the part where Richard Dreyfuss reaches into the hull of that boat from under the water.
Mm-hmm.
And the dead fisherman's head, he grabs the tooth and the dead fisherman's head pops out. And it's like the big scream, right?
Yes, I remember.
And so I have a very, very vivid memory of that, I'm sure, because that's the one that broke my brain. Mm-hmm. And So I'm not even sure that I was in a car at that point. It might have just been walking back from the bathroom. So anyway, so yeah, Jaws broke my brain. Thanks, Spielberg.
I think it broke America's brains for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
But shark fear is actually a real thing that people really deal with. What's it called? Galeophobia or selachophobia.
Ooh.
And yeah, and there's tens of thousands of people who deal with this. And yeah. If wearing a little bracelet can make people who have this feel better, then that's a win for them. And that $25, a great looking piece of jewelry.
Thank
so why
you.
Not? It doesn't hurt anybody, right? It's
right. Only health. Right. Yeah. So, yeah. That and that's really the idea. That's obviously in the course of all of our research. And, you know, all the stuff that we were doing to prepare to come to market, I have lost a ton of that fear because, mm-hmm. the intellectual understanding of the minuscule risk of that has started to pervade more as I become a person like you, like your daughter, who gets to spend more time in the water, gets to spend more time around sharks.
Right. And now you're not a coastal person. You're Kansas City. You're middle of the country.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell me about like your first trip to the ocean, like what that means to you, like to be able to go in the ocean and not worry.
So we, before we started all this, or like when we were first kind of doing the really preliminary research, we took a trip to Hawaii and the beautiful island of Kauai, and they actually have a protected beach there. Big, huge boulders, right? Mm-hmm. Doesn't get very deep right there, maybe 7 feet or something.
Perfect and dark water.
Exactly. So I had to hang out on that beach for like 3 days while my son and my husband played in the water.
You missed out.
Totally missed out. Like in a devastating kind. Like now that I understand what that experience really is, and I did eventually get in the water, and was still terribly scared the whole entire time. Mm-hmm. You know, some little silver fish swam at my face, and I freaked out because clearly it was going to eat my head. And I was sure a shark could jump over the boulders because they jump. And get, just like all kinds of things.
And they're out to get you.
Yes. And because at the time I didn't understand that humans are not shark food. You know, we're too crunchy.
Mm-hmm.
We are not fat enough. We actually clog up their system and don't provide them with enough energy to swim for 24 hours a day. So their preference is not for us, and the overwhelming majority of people who die from shark bites die from shark bites, not it being eaten by sharks. Right. So they're
find
they're,
them if they got eaten,
right? Exactly. Right.
It would be a people to find. So,
or maybe smaller chunks. But anyway, so people die from the trauma of being bitten, not being eaten. So the shark comes up and takes a bite and is like, holy, whatever the snikey that was, I don't want that anymore. And so kind of understanding that as well is that it's the unprovoked, mistaken identity kind of bites that Shark Off really works to repel. So the testing, I totally got off point. So the experience that really made a difference to me and gave me even more passion about pursuing this, more passion than my fear, was getting beyond the fear. And when we were in Bimini, at the Bimini Biological Field Station, testing this with the crew there, we had a chance. We were waiting for access to some reef sharks, and we had a chance to snorkel. And the concept of snorkeling in the ocean, not all that far from where we knew sharks were, would have been just inconceivable for me. To my utter joy, I actually managed to get in the water and swim around this, it's a hull of a a sunken Navy ship. Perfect. And a naval ship. And it was just like this blissful, peaceful, like everything everyone who spends time in the ocean goes there for.
It's magical. Yeah. I've done snorkeling, and I don't have an innate fear of sharks like some people do. But I think we all have a fear of sharks. I've been out shark fishing, and I had a Mako shark jump out of the water next to the boat. Oh. And I felt this, and it came up next to the boat, did a flip, we almost touch it. And I almost jumped off the boat because I thought the shark was coming in the boat. And so, and I'm not afraid of sharks as a rule, right. but this instinctive, like, holy hell, I got to get out of here happened. So let's get to your Kickstarter campaign. So you're running, you're trying to raise money, $40,000 on Kickstarter. You just are at the beginning of that thing. You've got, 20 some odd backers now, about $800. So 40,000 is a long way from here.
It is. It is.
And so you're giving, for people who want to support this, you can go to fishnerds.com, click on the episode notes for this links, and of course, we'll link it up in the show notes as well. But you can go to Kickstarter, just look for Shark Off. It comes right up. So $40,000 is a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Where does that get you? How does that bring it to market for you?
So, the class of metal elements that make up our active element that are included in that. It's a whole class on the periodic chart. So part of our search has been working through those elements to find the one that is the strongest, puts off the most electrical charge, the highest electrical charge. Mm-hmm. Is plentiful enough, is cheap enough, it is the longest lasting possible because this does dissolve. That's what it's doing when it's working. Mm-hmm. And easy to work with. Most of these metals, when you are cutting them with a saw, they shoot off sparks of about 3,000 degrees. And so that makes for an interesting little afternoon in the garage.
I'm sure it does.
So we have worked through several alloys, and we have found yet another alloy. We got our proof of concept in July in Bimini with one particular alloy, but we now have found another one that is an improvement on that alloy for a couple of reasons, and so we need to go back to Bimini. So more testing.
Oh, work.
I know.
Abominable. Oh, no, what a terrible place to go. I know.
Yes.
I
can't believe it. Yes. Although I do have to say, they have some mosquitoes. That
Yeah. Well,
anyway, I heard Guam.
Mall, I guess.
That's right. And then, of course, inventory. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of inventory to purchase with that. And then the requisite marketing, the way we take this from $800 to $40,000 is by spending more of our money to make sure that we have access to more ways to get in touch with more backers and make them aware of our campaign.
Well, that's cool. And you guys are working hard towards sustainability as well. You don't want to have a negative environmental impact, which I read on your website. So that's really great stuff to know about. And I look excited. The Fish Nerds have backed you with $25 because I want a bracelet for one of my daughters, just because I think they're cool looking. And that's, by the way, cool looking is a good enough reason to buy these for somebody who, you got a surfer friend, or you've got people who live near the ocean, or who don't live near the ocean, who just think it's cool, get it for them. And it has a great conversation piece. It's interesting. And, $25 for a piece of jewelry, that's a win.
Yeah, we agree. And we've worked really hard to keep our costs down so that we can keep that retail price in a super affordable range. We want everybody who is afraid to put their toes in the ocean to have a different experience. Yeah. And have access to that awesomeness.
Well, I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting and cool. I'll be curious to see how it does. And we'll be, of course, following along with you and rooting for you, because we always root for everybody who we have on the show. We want everyone to win all the time. So we're hopeful for you. And again, you go to Kickstarter.com, just search for Shark Off, And, you know, you can pledge as little as money as you want, or you can pledge up to like $5,000 and get a trip to go swim with sharks. So you can, all kinds of fun there.
Yeah. Yeah. We worked for some interesting experiences to have on there for people.
Yeah. It's pretty great. That's pretty good. Now, kind of a little bit different. So once you close this deal and you get your $40,000, are you going to apply to like go on Shark Tank and go on TV with it and
stuff? Everybody says that. Everybody's like, go on Shark Tank, go on Shark Tank.
Yeah.
We've even got our intro line worked out.
Oh, you do.
Walk out and be like, sharks, we have a product that's absolutely going to repel you.
You're
going to
hate this.
So anyway, yeah, so it's possible. It's mm-hmm. possible. What we want to do after that, of course, after the fulfillment, we've put deadlines on there that are generous to us mm-hmm. in terms of getting back down to Bimini and testing the mm-hmm. alloy, because we want to send out the new alloy if we can. And so once that fulfillment is done, as soon as we send out that final batch, then we will go live on Amazon full retail.
Perfect.
So, yeah. And we'll see. We'll see if something like Shark Tank comes up, because it would be stunningly perfect.
It would. Well, it's funny. We've had, I think, 6 people come on our show with products and go to Shark Tank and win deals.
Wow.
So that's Fishners awesome. Are always a stepping stone. They never come back to us after, but they always go through us. So we're always waiting for you.
I don't think John, the crappy hippie, is going to let me get away with that. So. No,
he will stay on you. So he's a great yes. guy, and he just really he liked you, and he says, you got to talk to her, and he hassled me every day.
Thank you.
To do it. And so this morning, I got an email from him at like 4 in the morning. He's like, have you reached out to these people yet? And I'm like, no. And I'm like, I'll do it now. And so here we are.
There you go. Yeah. And we really appreciate it. We appreciate you spreading the message and your support. And we appreciate every buck. It all helps. And we are grateful for all of it.
Yep. So. And the nature of Kickstarter and all crowdfunding is from a little goes a lot. And so actually, I always encourage people, give us, if everyone gave a tiny amount of money, all these things win. It's the, so you think you have to give a lot that you don't give. So if you only have a buck to give, throw a buck in the hat, you know, and it won't hurt you at all. But if, you know, 500 people do that, it matters.
Right. So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we pretty regularly back products, back stuff, some mm-hmm. films. There was a film about a female, sumo wrestler. Oh, I just thought that was kick ass. Oh,
that's amazing. Yeah. And it's funny, everyone, whenever I have a Kickstarter person come on the show, just as a good faith thing, I always back them. Just because if I'm going to have you on the show, I want to be supportive. I don't like to have people on who I don't like.
Nice. Yeah, well, thank you.
That's my show. Yeah, well, right, thank you so much for coming on. Website one more time.
Is www.thesharkoff, mm-hmm. The Shark Off. And all of our social media is at The Shark Off.
At The Shark Off. All right. So that's perfect. Thank you so much, Shay Geist from Shark Off.
Thank you, Clay. Thank Good. You.
All right. Thanks, Shay. And I really enjoyed talking to her a lot. And now we're best friends. All right. Time to talk about stinky baits. That's right. It is the Stinky Bait Contest. Thank you for everyone who called in. We're still not getting great numbers of participators, but that means if you take advantage of our contest, you've got a great chance of winning. So you're going to hear in order the following people. Paul Chomo from the Varmint Podcast. Paul lives in Florida, where everything weird happens. Mark is from somewhere near Detroit. I don't know where. He won't tell us. Eric Hoffner is from Western Massachusetts. Again, won't tell us. Just gives us the geographic geographic region. Tim from Michigan called in. Rich Collins from Thirst Productions. He's from New Hampshire. Reed from Minnesota called. Jeff Danielson, our effing librarian, calls in, and all that. So enjoy these. There's kind of a theme running through it. So as you're listening, try to find out what's similar about most of these things. At the end of that, I will announce the winner. If it's you, just drop me an email, clay@fishnerds.com, and I will give you your prize package, which includes, this time, a Fishnerds hat, a decal,
probably some fishing lures and a few surprises. I got a bunch of crap in my office, and you're going to get my crap.
Chief Executive Fish Nerd Clay Groves, this is your buddy Paul. How are you? Hey, you wanted stories about gross fish bait? When I was 13, 14, 15 years old, and I hung out with a bunch of misfits, and we put all sorts of weird chemicals into our body to have fun, one really gross thing that we did was we would, like, pick up half-smoked cigarettes, and we would continue smoking them, and we didn't really care whose mouth had been on those cigarettes, and then we would take those cigarette butts, and we would go fishing with them, and we had a little pond where we had bluegill, and they would absolutely hit on anything. You could put anything on a hook, and they would bite at it. They would hit it. And so we would take these little cigarette butts, and we would chop them into little bits, and we would put them on a hook, put a little lead sinker on there so that they would go to the bottom. And we caught bluegill. We caught catfish. We caught gar on used, double-used cigarette butts. Yeah, so there's my gross fish bait story. I'm sure other people have much nastier fish bait stories, but there's mine. Bye.
Hey, Commander Clay. This is Mark near Detroit. Grossest fish baits. I feel like I was born for this call. I'm a bit of a raw dude myself. I like to use a lot of gross and unusual stuff. I'd say the grossest I'd have to say I've used is the internal organs of roadkill. Specifically, you get yourself a nice opossum, nice raccoon, about 90 degrees in the summer, sun baking down. Just open that gut right up. As long as you don't have more than 25% liquefaction, just go ahead and ball that on your hook. I swear to God, the channel cats will start hitting it before it even gets under the water. Absolutely putrid. Nasty, nasty, nasty. And God forbid it spills in your truck. All right, guys. Tight lines, everybody. Clay, thank you for the show. I love it, dude. Y'all be well.
Hey, Clay. This is your friend in Western Massachusetts, Eric Hoffner, calling about stinky bait. Yeah, the worst stinky bait I've ever used is one that I've used my whole life, surf casting. It's menhaden. It's not any big surprise. Everyone probably knows about this big herring, but it's also called pogies or bunker, depending where you live on the East Coast. But when you can't get pogies fresh, which is most of the year, you have to buy them frozen, and you have to defrost them and cut them on a big board, and all the goo comes out, and it's just disgusting, and the goo gets all over your hands, and it just soaks into your hands and your clothes, and you just smell like it for days. But it is effective even in this disgusting format. I've caught stripers and bluefish and other things on it, but probably the best thing was when I was about 12 or 13, I caught an 18-pound bluefish from the beach on a frozen bunker. So, you know, it's got something going on. Pretty stinky. Anyway.
Hey, fish nerds. This is Brian from Des Moines, Iowa, and I'm calling in with my gross bait story. I love fishing for catfish, especially channel cat, and once a year we travel to Missouri to my in-law's cabin on a lake property, and I like night fishing for huge channel cat there. And I'll use a couple different kinds of baits, but the bait that I like using that really works best is chicken liver. And not just any chicken liver, but chicken liver that I set out in the sun to bake and ferment for at least a couple days. And it usually gets pretty gross to the point where it turns all green and starts to bloat the container and starts to seep out. And usually by day two or three, there's maggots around the outside of the container. It's pretty gross, but it does the job, and it smells something fierce. It makes you want to gag, but, you know, hey, the catfish love it, right? So this last year, I had done what I always do, and I let it ferment and and simmer out in the hot summer sun until it got really ripe. And we went to go pack up our stuff to leave for the cabin. And the smell was pretty bad, so I double bagged it. It was already in a container, and I double bagged it in a Ziploc bag, thinking that two seals were better than one. And I put it in the back of the car. So we hop in the car, the wife and I, and I'm like, hey, we need to go stop at the gas station to fill up before we get on the interstate. And the whole time, she's just not having it. She's sitting there in the passenger seat, just gagging and just making all sorts of horrible noise. She's about ready to hurl. And so we get to the gas station, and she's begging me to throw it out. She can't do a two-hour trip with that horrible scent in the car. So I decide to throw it out, even though I wanted to keep it. I'd spent so much hard time and effort trying to make it all nasty for the fish. And so she makes me throw it out, and where do I toss it? I decide to toss it in the garbage can at the gas pump. Unfortunately, some poor unfortunate soul probably had to smell that as they were pumping their gas. So that's my horrible gross bait story. Thanks guys. Bye.
Yeah, hi Clay. Hi Fishner. Them again. Just calling back again from Michigan. I realized that you were looking for horrible homemade bait experience on that last podcast. So a few years back, my wife and son had beat me to our vacation by a couple of days and had done plenty of fishing. Been relatively successful, caught a lot of panfish, and they were kicking them in a way that did not really keep them healthy or alive. So my son was like 9. I show up a few days later, they've got several dead fish, and he says, Dad, I want to do night fishing. And I'm like, oh, you're getting to the age where we can make night fishing. Let's make some bait. So I take one of the dead fish. Here were three, actually. The dead fish. I throw them in a Ziploc bag. And then I throw some vanilla, because I hear that's a good idea for catfish bait, into this bag. And then we set it in the sun all day the next day. Just dead fish, vanilla extract, sunlight. 90 degree heat, as you can sum. Very humid. We forgot about it, and then the next day, as I was making coffee, I was suddenly reminded that, that fun smell that we all know so well. And so I said, oh, Bobby, well, we forgot the night fish, but hey, what the heck, let's do what we've got for bait. And, God help me, when I opened that bag, it wasn't fishing bait. I don't know what it was, but it was absolutely horrifying. I tried to pull some of the batter from the slime, and it was just that. It was just like liquefied. It was disgusting. So that's, we couldn't, there was nothing to put on a hook. Not even like a bait. There was just nothing. So that's my, my awful fishing, homemade fishing bait. Thanks. Talk to you later.
Hey there, this is Rich Collins. I got a little bit of a cold here, so forgive me, but the grossest bait I've ever seen or used was actually done with some nerds. I think Vinny was there, Clay was there, I think Mason was there, but it was the time Clay Groves pulled a hot dog out of his pants pocket that he pilfered from the local 7-Eleven, I think. I don't remember where it came from, but we were carp fishing, but yeah, basically pocket hot dog would be the grossest bait I've ever used or seen. And we didn't catch any carp either, so that's it.
Hey, Clay, it's Reed from Minnesota. Just wanted to share a bait story. A few winters back, I decided to get creative and buy some squid from an Asian market and clip some of the tentacles off and use them for ice fishing, and they worked out fantastic. But I had a little bait puck full of them, and I left in the dead of winter. And in Minnesota, it was deep freeze, sub-zero. But I was gone for a week and a half, and before I got back, spring hit, I came home to 50 degree weather in a car completely full of flies and the smell of dead, rotted squid. And I had to take the interior out of the back of my car and bleach it and leave it out in the sun for a week. I couldn't drive the vehicle for a number of weeks. It was the worst decision I ever made. So ice fishing with squid, good idea. Leaving squid in your car on a 50-degree day, I don't recommend it.
Hey, it's Jeff the F and Librarian calling in about the grossest fish bait contest. Clay's pretty close to what I'd say my grossest is. It's when I was a kid, like the Ozarks, we used to run trot lines all the time for catfish, and our bait of choice was chicken hearts. But you really did need to leave the chicken hearts out several days unrefrigerated so that they get good and stanky, so they'd call them fish in with that good stank. So that's it. Fermented chicken hearts for catfish.
All right, everyone. Thanks for participating in the Stinky Bait Contest. Chicken livers for the win on this one. They are the most popular. It doesn't. Everyone seems to like chicken livers. When I'm fishing for channel catfish, I also use chicken livers. I'd be very curious now. How will chicken livers work through the ice? I almost said chicken fingers. So maybe I'll rotten up some chicken livers and drop them down an ice hole and see what happens. Now, time to announce the winner of the Stinky Bait Contest. The winner is Reed from Minnesota. Reed, drop me an email, clay@fishnerds.com, and I will send you your stuff. And I fully expect some pictures of you wearing your hat and stickers and things when you get it. Thanks so much, everyone, for playing. All right, this episode's brought to you by you, our listeners. If you go to patreon.com/fishnerds, you can help us fund this show. Patreon's like a Kickstarter, like an ongoing Kickstarter for art projects. And I'm an artist, and I need money to support all my work. And we're hoping that eventually we get enough people giving us money on Patreon where making this podcast can be my job. And what that would look like would be a much better, highly produced show. It would mean we pay our contributors for making content for us. Maybe I outsource the mixing. And we use some of that money for buying better equipment. We need better computers, microphones, all that sort of thing. So we're hoping that listeners will give us $1 per episode. If every listener did that, that's enough money right there to quit working, which would be amazing. That's $4 a month, nothing to it. And I'll mail you a sticker and a little note. If you give us $2 an episode, so $8 a month, I'll mail you a sticker, a little note, and a Fish Nerds hoorag, which are guaranteed to cover your face. If you give us $5 an episode, you get a Fish Nerds hat or beanie, plus all the other stuff. And at $25 per episode, which is a pretty high number, that's our sponsorship level. You give us that, I will mention your business on this show. Our friend Josh Lopes did that. Josh is a tax accountant, a tax accounting, and you can go to lopestax.com and find out all about him. And he gives us $25 an episode, so he gets everything we do. He's a good guy. All right, and this month, the money we earn is going to go to buying the Crappie Hippie a better microphone. He'd get this great interview with a local legend, which is coming up right now, Kim Burnett. And I think they're both sharing a microphone on this interview, and I'd like to get it so that we get nice, crisp, clean audio, because Crappie Hippie is a great guy, has great content, great stories to tell, and we want to get him the best we can. So enjoy this interview with Kim Burnett. Kim, you can find on Instagram at Crappie Stopper Jigs and Flies, or you can find Facebook and just look for Crappie Stopper Jigs and Flies, and we'll put links up in the show notes. So they're going to end our show. They're going to carry us right through the very end of the show. And then, big show next week. We took the ice fishing recording equipment on the ice, in our ice shack, and in the shack where there was a comedian, a paleontologist, and an ice cream vendor. Sounds like they set up for a joke. We'll see. Stay tuned. Enjoy the rest of the show. See you next week.
Every group of fishing friends has the one. They are the one who catches bigger fish and more fish more often. Their reputation grows, and soon their skills are known throughout the neighborhood, your lake community, your small town or school. Sometimes they're acknowledged in the media, but mostly their prowess, humility, and patient grace on the water is recognized and praised by those who know them or know of them. We call these fishers local legends. Thank you for that intro to our resident blues guy, Isaiah Beardstubble Medlock. You can catch his latest album, Suitcase Full of Tears, subtitle Came Up Empty Because Damn Suitcase Don't Hold No Water, on WTF Records. Hey, this is Crappie Hippie introducing our latest feature on Fish Nerds, Local Legends. I hope you enjoy it. All right, hello everybody. This is Crappie Hippie, your tree-hugging redneck from eastern Kansas, and I am doing an interview for Fish Nerds today with a remarkable fisher that I met on Instagram. And it turns out we're both a couple of O-Town boys from Olathe, Kansas at one point in our lives. Anyway, let me introduce my latest fishing hero, Kim Burnett. How you doing, Kim?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right. Okay, so now we've picked the most horrible day in the history of the year so far to go fishing. We're going to try to go over to a pond. We're hoping they're all not less like chocolate milk today because it's been raining after a 12 months drought. Now we've got so much rain we can't stand it. Anyway, this pond has some 5 and 6 pound bass. What's your go-to? What are you going to tie on first?
Oh, I made up some big bass streamers last night. So
okay.
Try that for the bass.
All righty. Well, that sounds like something that's going to work. Okay, so we met on Instagram. My handle being Crappie Hippie. A lot of crappie feeds show up. What's the name of your company?
Crappie Stopper Jigs and Flies.
And you tie jigs and flies for folks to keep them in the fish here around Hillsdale and Olathe and so forth, right?
Yeah, here, and I sell all over the country, really, jigs and flies, too. So I just sell local and abroad.
I got the Crappie Stopper, started following you on Instagram, and it was great to go up to Bass Pro and meet you and the rest of the gang. And tell me a little bit about that. You founded that fly tying group, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I didn't actually find it. I found a guy. My wife started working there when it first opened, and there was a guy back there tying. She told me about, and I went and talked to him, and he said they had a group. He said they tie there every Thursday. So he told me, if you're interested, come back next Thursday. So I went and went home and came right back. I had my stuff, and he looked at me like, I said, I'm ready now. I'm not going to wait till next week. And
right on.
That's how I met this group, and we've been there 12 years now.
Well, I want to go on and on about your fly tying story. First of all, let's just start with a basic 101 question. You know, who taught you how to fish? How'd you get started fishing?
Both my parents. We started as young kids like everybody else with our 202s and, you know, a little bobber and hook. And we progressed from there as we grew up.
And then what made you decide to switch to the noble art of fly rodding?
Oh, I was always interested as I got older. Then I just started, watching TV and stuff like that. And I bought me a fly rod. And actually, I didn't buy one. My grandpa gave me my first fly rod, which was an automatic. And I started messing around with that. And after I got that, I just took it from there.
That's fantastic. So completely self-taught on the fly rod, basically.
Pretty much, yeah.
All righty. And then to tie, how did the tying? I mean, it usually is an outgrowth because you can't keep up, or they don't have the fly you want, or you can't afford them. So how did you get started?
I started tying crappie jigs first. A guy at Cabello's showed me how to, put the thread on the hook and basically how to attach the materials and all that. Then I just went home and started messing up a bunch of them, practicing. And I got good at that. Then, like I said, I met these guys at Bass Pro, and they taught me how to tie flies. So I already knew the basics, so it was pretty easy for me after that.
Wow, so you're 12 years into it then after, hung out with some local fly tying folks. That's fantastic. Now, you also are best, most beloved fly shop, KK Fly Fishers.
They're a big fan of you over there. You go in there on Tuesday night, is that right?
Yeah, I tie there on Tuesday nights also.
And I see you popping up on their calendar from time to time.
Yeah, I do. I do a few Saturday clinics when they want somebody to tie panfish flies and stuff like that.
Now, tell me about meeting Mike George, the deer hair wizard.
The Hall of Fame Mike George.
Yeah, the Hall of Fame Mike George.
He's like top three deer hair tires in the world. This guy's in the Hall of Fame, man. It's just amazing what he does. And it's not no pattern. He just sees it in his head and he just
starts stacking hair.
Man, he just stacks it, man. And it's amazing.
That is incredible.
And he has a website, too. So if people want to go see it and just go on Mike George's website.
All right.
You'll see all the work.
Well, you hang out with the elite for what that means around here in Eastern Kansas. But KK definitely can bring him in. It was great that you could be there for that. Now, speaking about our mutual friend Randy, he's always bragging about you and this and that and how you guys have a little friendly competition going on, who can tie the most jigs in an hour.
Yeah, right.
Who can, you know, tie a fly and run down and catch a fish first on it. He has a lot of fun with those competitions. How do those go?
Not well for him. They go real well for me.
We
have fun with it, though.
But he does it. He does. I think he stretches it a little here and there. But no, he does. He's pretty honest about how he comes up on the short end of that quite often. but you're a very competitive guy, the way I see it. You are a member of a crappie tournament, a crappie club.
Yeah, fish crappie tournaments, Kansas Crappie Club.
Kansas Crappie Club. Are you an officer in the club, or are you just
fishing? Yeah, I'm one of the admins on the page, and I help run the tournaments.
Okay, that's what I thought. You're a tournament, like a tournament coordinator for them.
Yeah.
So the Kansas Crappie Club, you participate. You just had a tournament. What was your role there? You said you didn't fish it.
Oh, it was a... There's another trail called the Kansas Crappie Trail, which is another friend of mine, and they had a benefit tournament for Children's Service League. So they had a barbecue competition, so I volunteered to be a judge. So I judged a barbecue competition, and then we had a fishing clinic for the children that were around that day. So me and my buddy did a clinic for all the kids that were there that day.
Well, let's get back. Okay, so you compete with the crappie fishers in the tournament life there. Also, though, you were telling me one night when I sat in at fly tying at Bass Pro in Olathe about an Iron Man type competition that you had been in.
Yeah, Iron Tire.
Iron Tie. All right. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about Iron Tire.
Iron Tire is kind of like you ever seen the show on Food Network where they chopped?
Iron Chef or Chop.
It's basically like Chop. So. Yeah. There's like five different categories, so they give you a bag full of supplies, and when you open that bag and dump it out, you have 10 minutes to make a fly out of what they dump on the table. You don't know what it is until you dump it out.
All right, okay.
And so then you got 10 minutes to come up with a fly with that material.
That's fantastic. And they also do one where they blindfold you, I heard?
Yeah, that's the second round. They blindfolded me, and... First swap, we pulled out the stuff in the bag, set it in the order we thought we were going to put it on the hook, and he blindfolded us. Then we had to tie a fly in 10 minutes, blindfolded, just feeling around for the material.
And then you get judged on how well it goes.
Yeah,
out.
They just judge how well it looks. And
so what's the last round? What's the last round?
Well, there was another round where we had to go get a person out of the bar, because we tied in the back of this bar in the little area they had. Yeah. They never tied before, set them down, tell them how to tie the fly without touching it. So we had to walk them through how to tie without touching the fly. So that was one category. I won. You had the top five qualifiers that won each round. There was like 30 people. So the top, whoever won that category in each category got to go to the finals. So there was five of us in the finals. And I went to the finals.
Fishing's Future. Tell me about Fishing's Future.
Well, I work with an organization that's called Fishing's Future. And we teach kids how to fish around, you know, from ages 3 all the way to 16, and we travel around the state of Kansas and put on clinics for kids. Our motto is outside for a better inside, so we're trying to get the kids off the iPads, phones, and get them back reintroduced to the outdoors.
Off the screen.
And taking care of this resource that we all love, you know. So we work for the Kansas Department of Wildlife. They can't hire enough people to go do angler education, so they use we volunteer. So they use us to go around and do their education. And in turn, we got all these sponsors that give us all the stuff that we need to put on our clinics all over the state.
All right. And now what's this thing I heard about you're doing at Fishing's Future and some of your other events when you're at the tackle shows and so on. You have the audience throw out Frisbees?
Yeah, they throw out Frisbees with a little hole in the center, a big hole in the center of it.
Okay. You
know, maybe about 12, 14 inches wide. And they put them out 60, 70 feet. And I cast a fly rod and I hit them in the center of them. 60, 70 feet cast. And they're all amazed. Like, ooh.
Yeah, well, I am too. I, you know, I'm kind of like Charlie and the kite tree, Charlie Brown and the kite tree when it comes to fly fishing. It's either going great, and then the next thing you know, I've tied myself up. But you did compliment me the last time we went. You said, yeah. You know, you're getting better and getting better, and I am working on it. One of these days, I'm going to get an actual tapered line and, you know, really get to and get that rod to load instead of this garage sale stuff I'm always using. You've always been an O-Town man.
Oh, yeah. I'm a suburban.
Yeah.
Country suburban guy.
Yeah. Well, I know you're dreaming, though.
Yeah, I'm dreaming. My wife won't go. But I'm dreaming.
Yeah. All right, I'm gonna take this back down. Just some fun stuff. I'm gonna do some 101 first interview questions. You know, what do you like most about fishing? Just what is it?
Just the joy of being in the outdoors and catching fish on, you know, lures and stuff that I make myself. That's the enjoyment right there.
Well, I tell you, you must enjoy it because, you know, I've seen you out on days when posting Instagram and stuff on days where I stuck my nose that far outside, slammed the door, and went back and threw on another coat. So you really do dig it, and you are always out there, you say, every Saturday, no matter what.
Every Saturday, no matter what, and any day I can squeeze in between.
I fish
all winter long. I fish all year long. There's no off season for me. I fish all year long.
And fish the conditions is your mantra. Just
gotta do what you gotta do.
All righty. Of course, I'm going to ask this. Everybody asks this and wants to know this. What are your top three favorites to go after when you go fishing? I think I can guess number one, but.
Crappie. I like bluegill a lot. And I don't know, bass.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm a pond and lake fisher guy.
Pond and lake, yeah. And largely.
And big reservoirs.
Big reservoirs when you. Yeah. Oh, and you just got a boat, by the way, right?
Yes, I did.
How's that project coming along?
Good. I just, I'm going to do the carpet in it. I got the doors off, and I'm getting ready to redo the carpet on the doors. Actually, I'm putting grip tape instead of carpet.
All right.
Replace the carpet, then we ain't got to worry about it. But I got it covered up now, and I'm just got the doors inside. I'm going to clean those up and go ahead and replace the carpet that's on them.
Well, that's fantastic. So it fires up and
yeah, it runs good.
It runs
it's
great.
An 18-foot Striker. It's the Cajun style boat.
Yeah,
we've got 150 horse Evinrude V6.
That's plenty.
That runs
good. Plenty.
Just needs a little TLC and should be ready by spring.
Be ready by spring. So I don't know. We're gonna have a boat launch event, something like that.
I don't think so. I think we're gonna launch it. It ain't gonna be no event. We're gonna launch it.
Well, look, I'm just trying to wangle an invitation here, okay?
Yeah.
Do you have a dream, some ambition to catch something that you haven't fished for? Or, you know, dream destination, something you want to go and do?
Yeah, I love to go to Florida, fish the canals, fly fishing for like peacock bass.
And, right.
You know, all the stuff they catch in there, for
right
tarpon,
on.
Childas, you know, stuff like that.
Okay.
I could do that.
Yeah, and then you told me also you and I are kind of cut from the same cloth. One of my dream destinations go like Lake Washington or Lake Erie or somewhere in pursuit of that 3-pound crappie.
Yes, I definitely like that.
Okay, yeah, and what's that lake in Louisiana you want to go to?
Grenada or Sardis?
That one, that's the one.
Yeah, those two are probably the top two that they talk about. There's other
right
lakes there that have 3-pound fish, but that's yeah where the crappie trail usually goes, so they talk about those more. But.
All right. Well, it's definitely a shared dream. Maybe we'll get there one of these days. Okay, I'm just going to give this over to you. Every fisher loves to tell stories, and or at least has a few. Tell us about the wintertime dock fishing.
Dock fishing in the wintertime is it's one of my favorite times of the year. You know, all the diehards come out and all the hunters go hunting, but, you know, a lot of people are not there, except people that know about it, and people don't think fish bite in the winter. So we fish down there every year at Hillsdale, and we fish outside in the slips, and I'm catching fish. Like, I limit out almost every week, and there's people down there that don't know how to fish in the wintertime, and they're watching me, and they're always looking at me like, why is this guy catching all these fish? You know? So eventually they come down, and they're like, hey, what are you using? I said, these crappie jigs. Where'd you get them? I made them. Really? Yeah. So then that's how the conversation starts.
And is that kind of how the business started as well?
Yeah, that's probably. Yeah, that's about how it did start. And just, you know, people seeing me catch fish after fish. He, my best friend that I met, not my best friend, but one of my good friends, I met him down there. And he was eyeing me from across the, I was fishing indoors that day. And I seen him over there eyeing me from across the dock in indoors. And I'm catching fish after fish. Nobody's catching nothing. And he finally came up to me. Hey, what are you using? Same thing. I'm like, jigs that I made.
Yeah.
He said, can you show me how to do that? I'm like, yeah, I'll teach you how to fish in wintertime. I said, yeah, I'll teach you. And we got together and we started fishing for a little bit, you know, a few times. And then we hooked up and we've been friends ever since. Because, you know, marabou performs better than plastic in the winter.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And some people are fishing too fast. You know, they're sitting there jigging and jigging and jigging. I tell them, you can't jig it real fast. Sometimes they don't even want you to move it. All they want you to do is a subtle pop and you let it sit there. And that's all they want. They don't want you sitting there jigging, jigging, jigging like it's spring or, you know, summer or none of that. Winter's a slow presentation because fish are not in a real feeding mood. They go into a lethargic, you know, feeding mood. So they just sit there and they don't want to expend any energy chasing anything. So they see it as an easy offering. So you sit there and let them look at it, and they're going to get tired of looking at it. So you give it that little subtle pop and let it fall back, and that's when they hit it.
So it's about presentation. It's about patience. And it's
about, it's a slow presentation, and some people are fishing way too fast.
Yeah.
And that's why they don't catch a lot of fish.
Yeah. Okay, so you catch a lot of fish, and I think Hillsdale's a really intense fishery to produce so many fish, with as much fishing pressure. People go out there and still do well. They may not catch, you know, as big a fish as you might catch elsewhere,
right?
But there are certainly a real high rate of replacement and so on. So, you know, we got to keep those crappies. We got to keep some, or they're going to stunt, and you know,
right.
We do that. And so we leave it up to Fish and Game to tell us, you know how many it's okay to keep, and then we have our fish fry. So let's talk about this, because, you know, another thing. I was a chef for a long, long time, and I always wanted to get it back to food. Cooking the fish, what's your favorite recipe?
I use Louisiana fish fry in the red and white package.
Okay. All right.
Red, white, and blue package. I mean, it's already seasoned.
So deep fat or
pan fried. It just depends on if I'm cooking for a lot of people, I get a big thing. If I'm cooking for me and my wife, I just use a, you know, cast iron skillet.
Right.
And shallow pan fry.
And what goes on the side?
Fried potatoes, spaghetti, cornbread.
All right. And these days, lots of vegetables, some
greens.
Yeah,
nowadays,
stuff.
A lot of greens.
A lot of greens. Got to have those greens.
Yeah.
Well, I think that cold water crappie cannot be beat.
It can't.
When it comes to flavor. I mean, it is one of the best fish in the world. All right. I want to wrap this up just with a couple things about our respective businesses, okay? You're tying the jigs and the flies, and I make lead-free lures and tackle. And what kind of price are you paying on your lead jig heads? Or do you make your own or you buy
them? I pour my own. I pour 1/80th all the way up to a quarter ounce.
Okay. And what's lead cost you a pound?
Nothing, because I had a friend that gave me so much lead I'll never have to buy anymore.
Oh,
I
really?
About 500 pounds of lead at home.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, and it's the plumber's lead.
Oh, so it's good stuff.
That you roll up, it's real thin.
The soft lead?
Yeah, so.
Oh, real soft piece.
It's real lead. It's not that wheel
No wheel
weight. That'll ruin your pot that people try to use. It's not all lead. I keep telling them, it's not all lead. You're going to ruin your pot with that cheap stuff.
Right.
But I pour my own. It's just cheaper.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to give you a few lead-free jig heads before you get out of here today. And I want you to try them with your painting method, because I'm getting these done with a bismuth, which majority in them, they still have tin in them, because you can't make anything out of straight bismuth.
Yeah, tin. Tin is a good product.
Bismuth won't, it'll shatter. It won't hold together if it's just pure biz.
Right.
But it can take a higher heat. They say you can't, because you like to epoxy paint. You like a powder paint.
Yeah.
And that's one problem with it, like a straight up tin. You've got to use either an acrylic or a latex or something else, or not latex, I mean a vinyl. So anyway, I'll give you some before we part ways today. And I also am going to price out the metal and kind of show you, you know, if you ever want to add lead free to your line, you know, I can help you do it in terms of acquiring the metal and in terms of, you know, how to get the right ratios and stuff that, you know, we could, to keep you in the powder. Because that's one thing that I noticed it stops a lot of guys is that they can't powder paint the tin.
Right.
You know, and we want to get into metals that, because my deal is I want to find out, you know, what's besides the fact that, see, you got lead for free. You know, you got it. It was such a cheap material to the plumber when he got out of the business.
Right.
He just said, take it, you know, because, you know, probably couldn't have got any money for it anyhow. You know,
right. Or
just probably traded it to another plumber for something else. This is kind of what we're up against with lead being so cheap and available, even though it's highly toxic. And you know my whole spiel on that.
Nice.
If we have a range, not free. I don't think I can get you into tin bismuth for free.
Nothing's free.
But if I can get you, can I get you into a 20-cent jig head or a 15-cent jig head? What would be your price point on something like that?
A piece?
Yeah.
Yeah, 15, 20, yeah.
15 right in there, 15, 20. All righty. Well, it's a good goal for me to shoot for. It's what I need to know. You know, I talk to everybody about, you know, what they're doing, how they like to fish, you know, why they use lead. And the number one thing is, you know, it's cheap and it's easy to get. So that is our main problem. As you know, now, if you wanted to, you know, if there was a designated water, say we went up to Canada and we wanted to fish a lake that you know, required lead free, would you do it?
Oh, yeah.
And what would be, how much more would you be willing to pay for a lead free lure if you had to buy one versus, say, your standard lead spinner bait is $5. How much higher would you go?
Probably a few more bucks.
Oh, wow. So you're talking a few more bucks would be, you know, I'm trying to get it about 10%, 20%. You know, 30% at the most. So we're talking.
Oh, you mean
10% lift would be $5.50. You know, and so on. You know, $5-$6 would be where $5.50 to $6 would be right where I would try to get my bait.
Right.
And then you know that way I could use the same quality of components and so on and so forth. All right, fish nerds. Well, I'm going to wind this up. Is there anything else you'd like to say to the fish nerd crowd before we sign off tonight? Thank you very much, first of all, for coming out here and talking into the microphone with me for a little bit and enlightening us on the, you know, the underlying expertise. You never know what Olathe might offer you. It's kind of a backwater suburb, but anyway, anything else you'd like to say to the audience before we sign her off today?
Yeah. One thing that all you fishermen out there, if you got a chance to take a kid fishing, please do, because they are the future of anything. And that's what I'm trying to, you know, do for myself, is just teach many kids as I can to protect this resource that we have. So I'm just asking, if you know any kids underprivileged, privileged or whatever, just take them fishing and teach them something, and it'll help.
Well, that's awesome. And I like the way you said that too, because I know, you know, these poor country kids all get to go fishing, and some of them city kids, if their parents ain't into it, they have to.
Yeah, they ain't going.
They ain't going. Okay, that's it, fish nerds. We've had a lot of fun with our guest, Kim Burnett. And I had a lot of fun as your friend, the crappie hippie, doing my first interview for fish nerds. We're going to get out of here right now. Remember, you've listened to a bunch of fish nerds when you could have been out fishing. We'd like to thank our families for putting up with all our crazy fish nerd ways. And remember to always follow the code of the fish nerds.
Spawn early and often.
Never accept a free lunch with strings attached.
Swim against the current every chance you get.
All right. Bumps on that, Kim. Fish nerds out. My gimmick is this. Tight lines and valentines. Crappie hippie. Peace out.
Whether you're fly fishing in a stream, getting those ankles wet, or deep in the ocean casting nets, fish nerds. Fish nerds. It's a podcast.
Just for the halibut.
Fry it in a basket or broiled in a pan. Eat it raw like you're in Siam. Fish nerds. Fish nerds. Fish nerds. It's a podcast.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.